and welcome to the Triathlon Coach Podcast. My name's Simon Ward and I'm your host for this weekly show where my goal is to share practical, usable advice from the best athletes, coaches and experts from the world of triathlon so that you can get the most from your training time and maximize your enjoyment of the triathlon lifestyle. If you don't already know me, I'm the founder of thetriathloncoach.com and the SWAT Inner Circle, and I've been a triathlon coach for over 20 years, working with absolute beginners right up to Olympic athletes and coaching them to race at distances from sprint through to Ironman. Reviews and ratings are the currency of podcasts, so if you enjoy today's conversation, I'd really appreciate it if you could drop into iTunes, Podbean or Stitcher and leave a rating and a review. And while you're there, please subscribe to our weekly episodes so that they can be downloaded straight into your phone or your iPad or wherever you choose to listen to them. And finally, to say thank you, I have a free gift for you. I've put together 25 of my top tips amassed from 30 years of racing and training and coaching in the sport. All you have to do is email triathlonsuccess to beth@thetriathloncoach.com and she'll send it right out to you. Okay, now it's time to crack on with today's guest. Welcome back, listeners. This week, it's me again, and today I wanted to cover the often discussed subject of how to train for an Ironman. Now, this could well turn out to be the first of several parts, and today I really want to dive into the basics. Now, this doesn't matter whether you are attempting to complete your first Ironman or Ironman distance, whether you only have the intention of finishing, you've done several, but you still only have the intention of finishing, whether you want to set a personal best, or even if you wish to qualify for that coveted place on the Ironman start line in Hawaii. You have to have the basics. So let's take an analogy of a builder. I've never built a house in my life. My friend has been doing this sort of construction work for 30 years, and yet, if we were starting from scratch, we would both use the same template to build our house, right? And that starts with the planning and then the foundations. A lot of that stuff goes unseen by the eventual owners of the house. But nevertheless, the sexy stuff can only exist and only exist in the long term with correct attention to detail to the planning and the initial preparation of foundation. Before I get on to the main part of today's podcast, you may well be wondering what gives me the right to be explaining to you how you should be training for an Ironman. And it's a perfectly good question, so I thought I'd just give you a little run through so you understand where I'm coming from. I've been coaching now for best part of 25 years. Actually, I think it's 1995, so 24 years. During that time, I've guided over 1,000 athletes to finish 140.6 distance events. Now, quite a lot of those I've coached directly, one-to-one, writing their programs every week, having regular conversations with them. For others, I have provided programs and given them sort of more remote guidance in phone calls, in blog posts, in occasional direction pointers, having looked at their training programs. Each of them, though, have followed the general template that I've set for them and managed to achieve their goal. I would say about 5% of the people I've worked with have reached Kona in 20 years. During the last few years, I've been the official coach for outlaw triathlon events. And so each year, out of the 1,000 or so finishers we have at Home Pierpont, I would say that a proportion of those people, maybe 5%, so maybe 50 of them, have used my training programs. As a coach, I've made every mistake. I've seen every mistake that athletes make. I've tried every approach. I've tried long, slow distance training. I've tried high volume work. I've tried intense work with low volume approach. I've tried a long 9-month build up and I've tried a short build up. I've tried it all. I've made mistakes. I've seen athletes make mistakes. Believe me, I've seen them make some huge, big mistakes. I'm also a strength and conditioning coach. So one of the things you will hear me talk about frequently is the importance of strength and mobility work. I'm also a nutrition coach, and you will hear me talk about the importance of a balanced and sensible approach to nutrition from the moment you start your training and beyond when you finish, not just for the few months when you're preparing for your race. I'm also a triathlete. You'll have known from the introduction to this podcast that I've been competing in triathlons for 30 years, and I did my first iron distance event in 1995, and in the interim, right up until October 2017, I have done 19 iron distance races. Now, my time's not important because, as you should all know, that the performance of an athlete has no bearing on their ability as a coach. If you're actually interested, my best time was 10:18. So that is neither amazing nor is it shabby. But what I consider it to be in the middle, I've never been under 10 hours. I don't think I ever could go under 10 hours. Definitely never going to go under nine hours. And I think my slowest finish was on a... longest race was on an off-road overnight Ironman, which we did on the south coast called the X-Tri, which took me 25 hours. So I've been out there and done it. I've also done the Norseman. I have raced in Hawaii. So, you know, I think I know what I'm talking about. And the principles I'm going to deliver to you today are ones that I've found that work time and again. I've gone away from them, come back to them. Okay, so the general principles that work. What I would say is you're an individual. So within the parameters of these principles I'm going to give you, you still have to find what works for you, because your situation is different from your friend who may also be preparing for the same race. He may work less than you. He may not have as many children as you. He may not have such a stressful job as you. He may not commute as much as you. He may do more. He may have more years at doing triathlon or yet less years. Genetics may have determined that he is more or less suited to training for this type of event. Get what I'm saying? Everyone's different. Find what works for you. So let's crack on then with what I think is really important. So the first thing before you even start, you've probably already entered for your Ironman race. However, I would say that the biggest thing you need to do is be realistic. Now, there are some people who enter for this race, and when they enter for it, it's maybe a year away and it seems like a good idea. But then when they get into the training, they get frustrated because they can't do enough training. How much is enough training? There is no golden rule for this. It's what works for you. If you can only manage 10 hours, then there's no point in thinking that 15 hours is what you need to do, because you don't have that time. So either you cut your cloth accordingly, or perhaps next time you enter an event like this, you just consider a bit more deeply whether you have the time right now to enter that event. But you've, assuming that you're here and you're listening and you're interested, you've already entered. So work out what time you have available, not just now in January and in the next couple of months in February, March, but if your race is in July, how much time are you going to have to devote to your race? So be realistic. Be realistic with your goals as well. If you've never done an Ironman race, or if you've done one, then for those of you attempting your first one, honestly, you have no idea what beholds you. It's not like just doubling up a half Ironman. It's probably doubling it up and adding 10 or 15%. There is no point really in deciding what you think is a respectable time. That's just baloney. I hear people saying, yeah, it's respectable if I go sub 12 hours. So if you go 12:01, are you telling me that's not respectable? Are you telling me that you actually think that your time's been wasted if you do 12:30? I think that if you think you should do 12 hours and you do 12:30, there's a reason for that, and that's because it was all you were capable of on the day. Nobody ever sets out from the start of the swim thinking, I'm just going to do 12:30, do they? Everybody sets out with the best intentions, but things happen during the day, more things than you could ever imagine, like a lifetime squashed into less than 17 hours. Events happen, obstacles are thrown in your way. Challenges occur and you have to meet all of those and get past them. And even if you're out there for 16 or 17 hours and beyond, that's probably just reflects the challenges you had and the fact that despite multiple opportunities to quit, you didn't. Now, if you've done one iron distance race before, you know what time you're going to be finishing in, or you know what time you finished in your previous race, but the one you've entered this year may be a tougher course. Maybe hotter, maybe colder, there may be more hills, there may be more wind. The conditions, even if you're doing the same event again, the conditions may be completely different from this year. So you've got a rough idea of how long you're going to be out there. But what you can't do is say, right, I did 13 hours last year and I've done a lot more training this year, so I think I'm going to go 12 hours. Quite frankly, trying to knock an hour off your Ironman and aiming for that is a ridiculous notion, because by setting your stall and going for that from the gun, you're more likely to blow up and end up failing. So if you're looking for PBs, be realistic. Go for 15 minutes. If with a few miles left to go, you find that you're actually ahead of your target, then give it everything and go for 20 minutes. But again, one of those big mistakes that I've seen time and again is people trying to aim for huge gains. It's really difficult to target that. Okay, other things to be realistic about with your time is what can you consistently manage? So can you do 10 or 15 hours training this week? If you can do it this week, can you do it next week? What can you manage every week between now and your race? If you've got 26 weeks to go till your event and you could manage 10 hours a week on average between now and then, that's 260 hours. That's an awful lot of training time. And it's much better to do that than it is to try and do something more and then fail and get ill. I'll come back to that in a minute. But let's talk about the foundation that I mentioned in the intro. Firstly, good training is supported by recovery. Please don't skimp on recovery. I've seen a huge error when people try to cut down on sleep and recovery in order to fit in more training. Now, arguably, if you're adding more training, you need to add more recovery as well. So taking away from your sleep, getting up earlier, not going to bed any earlier, but getting up earlier so you can fit in a longer bike or go for a run or get to the pool is folly, which will end up in disaster at some point. As I said, if you're going to do more training, arguably, you need to do more recovery. So every 15 minutes of training you do, you maybe need to fit in an extra 5 minutes of sleep. Now, you don't have to sleep. Sleep's the best form of recovery, bar none. But meditation helps, and so does stress management. And if you have a highly stressful job, then you have to take this into account as well. So nutrition is also part of your recovery. Where athletes go wrong with nutrition is they know what they need to eat, but they fail to think in advance. They fail to plan ahead with their meal times, with their meal timetable and what foods they want. They fail to plan ahead with their shopping. So get this in place. Get some rituals set up when you're going to prepare food in advance. Cutting up salads, cutting up vegetables, having some frozen meals ready for those days when you get home late. Making food the night before so you can take it to work so you're in control of what you eat at correct meal times and maybe before and after training if you're going straight from work to a training session. So you have to plan ahead with your nutrition. You have to plan ahead with your recovery. Now, one other thing that I see athletes ignore because they're trying to do more swimming, biking and running is mobility and strength. Mobility is good use of the full range of the muscle length, creating efficient movement. My friend Sarah Pitts, who if you are a member of my Cafe Triathlon Coach Cafe page or my SWAT group, you will know that Sarah posts some amazing stuff and does some great work with mobility. She's always argued with me, and I now believe her, that building extra strength is no good if you can't use the muscle through its full range of motion before that. So if you're tight in the lats and you want to be a better swimmer, you're far better off extending the range of motion you have around your upper back and your shoulders first so you can get a full range through the stroke than you are by doing lat pull downs, bent over rows and chin ups. Because that will just give you extra strength in a limited range of motion, and that's actually not going to help. So increase mobility in the ankles, in the hip flexors, in the shoulders and the lats, and in the upper back for rotation are really important. And the experts, people who are smarter than me, agree that for every hour of training you do in a day, you need to be setting aside 15 minutes of mobility work. You've heard that one before. I make no mistake. Make no apologies for repeating that time and again. Now, the other misconception is that strength is about lifting big weights. That's important if you want strength, but that's global strength. That's strength of prime movers. Triathlon is a lot of movements that are repeated time and again, hundreds of thousands of times during your training journey to your event in the summer. Right? And if you train over 10 years, millions and millions of movements, the same. Front crawl, cycling pedal stroke, running stride, same movements. So it's important to strengthen up the little muscles around those joints. They need stability and they need to have a lot of local muscular endurance so they're able to provide stability when you get tired. And when you get tired and those muscles fatigue, then you start going through altered range of movement and altered movement patterns. And that's when the beginnings of an injury occur. So we need stability. These are small movements. They could be balancing movements with just your body weight. They don't need big weights. And with a lot of this work, you can do it in your own home with little to no equipment and a very small amount of space. And you can do it without any detriment to those key swim, bike and run sessions. But make no mistake, you should be setting aside time now and right through to your race and beyond to cope with this. And if you ever watch the end of an Ironman or even the end of a marathon and watch the age groupers coming in, you will notice that most of them aren't breathing that hard, but they're still struggling. So think about why that might be. It's not because their engine is letting them down, it's because the body's letting them down. And that's the area where they need to work on. The big problem is that most of these things are an afterthought. So we plan in our swimming, we plan our biking, we plan our running, and then we've got no time left. So that's why mobility and strength gets marginalised. That's why we don't think about our nutrition. That's why we cut back on our sleep. In an ideal world, and if you trust my judgement, then you will start by finding time for these things and then fit the swim, bike and run in around them. Now, it takes a leap of faith to believe what I'm saying is the right path. But if you try it and it works, then you will know. Please don't pass judgment unless you've done that. All right, next thing, commit to consistency. It's the number one way to reach your start line in good shape. Consistent training. I would say that if you've got a plan between now and your race, you've worked out how much training you can do, you've set the sessions down, you know what you're going to be doing. All right? So why can't you, can you commit, can you sit there while you're listening to me talking here and nod your head and say, I know that I will finish every single session that I have planned. If you don't think you can do that, then my question to you is, why not? Whatever your answers, you need to find solutions to stop yourself missing those sessions. Now, here are some of the things that you might say will get in the way. You won't have enough time. Well, surely if you've planned your day outright and you've planned your week outright, you've made time for the training. You might get injured. Yes, you may get injured, but getting injured is not an inevitability. You shouldn't be preparing and planning to get injured. What you should be doing is preparing and planning to avoid injury. You may get ill. Of course you may get ill. People get ill. But why do they get ill? They get ill because they're not paying attention to the simple parts of their life that keep them healthy. Washing their hands, eating correctly, getting enough sleep, making sure that their immune system stays strong, being careful about being in the company of other people who are ill, so not letting their guard down, being on it all the time. You may say that you're tired through a lack of sleep and therefore you can't get up for your Saturday morning swim session, but why not? Why are you tired? Haven't you been getting enough sleep? Have you been doing too much training for the amount of sleep that you can currently get? I understand that emergencies happen. Things happen in your life that you can't predict. Your children get ill at school and they have to stay at home and somebody has to look after them. Your boss throws in a curveball and says he's got a foreign trip that you need to take, or you have a deadline that's brought forward and you have to work long hours to get it done. I understand that. And those are some of the unforeseens. But for the most part, if you've got a plan, you should be able to commit to making 100% of the sessions. Now, the other thing that can get in the way is when you have an event or a session that's really tough. And what happens is you end up, let's say you go to the track and you do a really heavy track session and your legs are sore the next day, which means that the bike session you have doesn't happen. I get that. That's what happens when you train hard. But why have you trained so hard? You know, particularly if you're training for an iron distance race, do you need to train so hard that it's going to leave you too fatigued to do the next day's session? Now, if it's a race and it's a good idea to do events along the way, a training race should be just that. Should be enough to push yourself, but not so hard that you're exhausted and you get injured or ill. If you do have a race in there, let's say you've got a standard distance triathlon or a half iron distance race as a preparation, then by all means plan for that. Have it in there, but plan so that you can have a few days of easy afterwards and thus you don't miss any planned sessions. So commit to consistency. All right, so the next thing is you need to know your limiters. What's really getting in your way? Are you getting in your way? Do you spend too much time faffing and not making it to sessions on time? Do you get to the pool but then spend ages thinking about what you're going to do and looking at the session and waiting to get started? Or do you get straight on with it? So, are you limited by time? Well, that should have been obvious with your planning. Is your health limiting you? You know, are you on medication? Are you suffering from colds regularly? I'd be looking at that before I look at a big training program, to be quite honest. What about injury? If you're getting injured repeatedly, I think you need to look at the type of training you're doing. I think you need to perhaps go and see somebody who can help you look a bit more deeply at the types of injuries you're getting and where the training is just exacerbating a weakness that's somewhere else. So you might have an Achilles injury, but that's actually caused by a weakness in your glutes. Is your limit to your swim, bike and run fitness really? I mean, if you have to make the iron distance swim in 2 hours 10 and you currently can only swim 3.8k in 2 hours 20, then yes, your swim fitness is letting you down. Likewise, the bike and the run, and you do need to work on those. But there may be other factors at play here which are causing those limiters. So, for instance, on the run, you may not be fast enough because you're carrying too much weight. So that will be something to work on. In the swim, you're able to swim quite fast over short distances, but you don't have the endurance to continue that over long distance. So it's a specific aspect of your fitness. Maybe you have a lack of mobility around the hips, which limits your running, in the lower back, which and shoulders, which limits your ability to get aero on the bike, or maybe in the upper back and the lats, which limits your ability to swim effectively. Motivation. Now, it's not something I normally come across with athletes who are training for events like this. They're usually highly motivated and they're like greyhounds on a lead. You have to hold them back. Not like some of the personal training clients I used to have where you had to drag them along, like trying to take a naughty child to school. Not in triathletes. However, there are times when we all lose our motivation, but there are usually reasons for that. And it's because of stress. Too much stress in the rest of your life leads to this feeling of being flat. You lose the motivation to do stuff. Repetition, boredom, maybe same old, so there are, but look deeper into why you're lacking motivation, and fatigue is often part of that as well. So maybe you lack direction. Maybe you've got the option of 5 or 6 different training partners and different training plans, but everybody's telling you something different. So instead of sticking with one idea, you're going around in circles trying all of them and never really making any progress. Again, trust me on this. I will ask you several times more in this episode to trust me. Everything you do will work if you stick to the basic principles. So the time for reflection is after your race. Finally, maybe you don't have the experience. Maybe that's your limiter. Maybe a lack of experience causes you to make mistakes and that's your limiter. What I would say now is the best thing for you to stop these getting in your way later is to identify them now, be brutally honest, and work out what you can do. Now, that's where having a coach is good, because coaches hold you accountable. Coaches ask you challenging questions. Anyone can write a program. The benefit of having a coach is that you have somebody holding your hand, but you also have somebody challenging you, and you also have somebody to help you work out the solutions to these issues. Okay, so some general training principles for you. Keep this in mind all the time. Race intensity of an event that's 140.6 miles long is generally pretty low. For most athletes, it's around 70%. As you get towards the pointy end in the age group and towards the pro level, these guys are highly conditioned. They're also genetically gifted for racing endurance events like this. They've got something that most of us don't have, so they can probably race at that level at a lot higher intensity. They also have the benefit of experience. For most of us, though, it's pretty low. Now, it feels quite hard after 10, 12, 14, 16 hours. But if you were to go out and do a swim, a bike or a run at 70% intensity right now for an hour, I can guarantee it would feel pretty comfortable. So next thing is, most athletes slow down dramatically in the second half of the run. So my recommendation here, and I'll come back to this again, is that rather than trying to be a faster runner, you work out how to avoid slowing down. Come back to it later. And I've already given you a clue earlier on. For most athletes, aerobic fitness, by the time they get to race day, aerobic fitness is not generally a limiting factor. It's the other stuff. Again, I alluded to that when we talked about mobility and strength and stability and the way the body holds up under fatigue. That's where your limit will come, not the performance of your heart and lungs. Finally, you need to ignore the noise. Find your own path. Remember, consistency. is the key to success. Do everything you can to find that. You won't go far wrong. Next point, get the basics right. Now, in brackets, I've put avoid marginal gains. We all love marginal gains. I thought this was a fantastic idea when I first heard of it. Let's look for all those tiny little things where we can get 0.5%. And if we add them all together, we get 5% fitter. We do. And if you're Bradley Wiggins or Paula Radcliffe or Adam Peaty, you're definitely looking for marginal gains in what you do. A little, for Adam Peaty, it's a little bit more power off the dive, a little bit more speed out of that turn, a tiny little bit more flexibility. Add them all together, you've got that 0.1 of a second he needs to go, under 57 seconds or whatever his latest project is. Marginal gains, remember it was something that came from Dave Brailsford and the guys at Team Sky and British Cycling. So that's elite athletes who are winning gold medals or Tour de France's. Marginal gains is perfect for athletes who are close to capacity in their potential. Me, I've got so much potential that's untapped. I don't need marginal gains. I just need to find those areas. Not the five areas that are going to give me 1%, but just one area that's going to give me 5%. And the same for you, guys. So, yeah. Look for things that are going to be marginal gains. Discuss with your mates on the Facebook page which tri-suit is the best in the wind tunnel and therefore is going to give you, an extra watt. Think about changing ceramic bearings on your derailleurs if you like, so it gives you an extra couple of watts. But never, never, never underestimate the benefits of those things that are going to give you 5%, like getting more sleep or just eating better. So some of the things you can try which are really going to give you some benefits. Just be efficient. Have good technique, okay? Particularly in the swim and early on the bike, you're going to save energy that you can use later on. That's huge. And you will need it later on. If by having poor technique, you have to use more energy in the swim to get through, then you're robbing Peter to pay Paul. That's energy you'll need in the last half of the run. And remember I said that's where athletes dramatically lose speed. So work on having good technique. You'll also find that good technique is great for helping you to avoid injury, particularly when running. Use some simple training zones. Easy, medium and hard will do. Doesn't need to be any more difficult than that. Sure, go for a lab test if you like. Be more precise, but bear in mind that precision for this training zones only works if you're going to be precise in everything else you do. So if you're going from the track worrying about what precise times you need to hold for your 1,000-meter runs, and then you go into McDonald's or you're not eating properly before you go to bed, then you've just wiped out all that precision in one go. Focus on what will give you the best result. I know your strengths and weaknesses, so go back to that point I made earlier, those points about your limiters. Okay, so the next thing you need to do is plan to achieve your goals. If your goal is finishing, what cutoffs do you need to make? Yeah, each race is slightly different. There are generalizations for 17-hour races, but there are local rules as well. Certain races finish at 11. Some races only have 15 hours. So you need to know what the cutoffs are for you, for your event, if that's your goal, is just to beat those. If you're setting a PB, then you've already raced over this distance. You've probably got a good idea. But if you're going to race in Ironman Austria for your first one, and then your next one is going to be Ironman Lanzarote, the chances of you going faster in Lanzarote than you did in Ironman Austria are slim, unless you're making huge gains. So think about the race you do. Also look at what other people have done in the past. So, if you tend to finish 20th in your age group, look at races and see what the 20th person in your age group has generally got. Look over 4 or 5 years so you can get a standard that doesn't include freak years where there was no wind or where the temperature was brilliant. If it's qualifying for Kona you're after and you're in with the shout, then you need to know what target performance puts you in the right ballpark. There's no guarantees here. Remember, you could set a PB, but two other people could come and have better races than you, and that's no fault of yours. That's what happens when it's an outcome-related goal. But at least if you know the rough idea, have a rough idea of where you need to be, you've got a target in mind and you can train for that. And then if you know, for instance, that you're going to have to run a 3:30 marathon, that's 8 minutes per mile, 5 minutes per kilometre. So can you run 5 minutes per kilometre for 42K after getting off the bike? Yes or no? if you've never been anywhere near that before, you've got some more work to do or some different goal setting. So have a really good idea and then plan your training around achieving that. Right, some specifics for you then. So the swim. So you do not ignore the swim. I know a lot of people think the swim is just a warm up for the bike. Let me tell you now, it is not. Okay. Firstly, as a commentator and a coach, I stand and watch the swim start and I see 20% of the field stood near the water looking at it longingly, waiting to get in. I see another sort of 30 or 40% of them behind, focused on the swim. Some of them are looking forward to it. Some of them are petrified. Then I see the others at the back who just wish the gun would go off an hour later. These are the people for whom the swim is a matter of survival, but it doesn't have to be like that. Even if you aren't going to turn yourself into an Olympic swimmer, you can still turn yourself into somebody who goes into that swim with intent, with a particular goal. And that goal should be to use the swim to set up your day, to get through it efficiently, not to get through it having pushed yourself to within an inch of your threshold for 3.8k. Get through the swim easily, have an enjoyable start to the day, then go to work on the bike and the run where you can make up some ground. How do you make sure the swim sets your day up well? Be efficient, keep coming back to that. Spend an awful lot of time on technique, on body position, on your mobility to get the right body position, on your pacing, and include kicking. There's no need to include race pace stuff right now. I'd be swimming endurance stuff to make sure you can swim the 3.8k comfortably. I would do the occasional amount of high intensity work, really swimming fast and hard. I would do a lot of kicking because this helps keep or get you into a sort of a nice rhythm. There's one other benefit of swimming as well. It builds great aerobic fitness with minimal injury risk. Not no injury risk, but minimal. So if you have a problem with running, do more swimming. Helps you out here. At a certain point, I would say swim open water. And when you swim open water, make sure you go with a plan that's going to help set you up for your race. Don't just swim around in a wetsuit getting wet. That's not really preparing for your event. Okay, the bike. Now, the bike is the area where you can make some huge gains. It has the biggest influence on your results, not just on your overall time, but also on your ability to run well. The goal with the bike should be to get off feeling reasonably fresh and ready to run, having ridden had a reasonable performance. I'd say this in just about every presentation I do when I'm talking about training for iron distance events, is that there are two categories of comment that come afterwards. The first says, I thought I got the bike just right, I had a terrible run. The second says, I felt like the bike was too easy, I had a great run. There's a reason for that second one. When you ride within yourself, you are conserving energy for the run. Okay, it feels like you're going too easy, but actually it's just right for the combination of bike and run. People who think they've got the bike just right have got the ratios wrong and have put too much effort into the bike. Okay, so when you're preparing now, the simple principles are that by all means work on boosting your functional threshold. However, it's an awful lot of hard work to boost FTP, but you could gain, or could you gain more time by dropping kilos if you have weight to drop, by be more flexible and mobile so you can get into an aero position and hold it for longer. Maybe a bike fit would help you to set your bike up a bit better. Maybe, you know, we talked about those marginal gains. What about just cleaning the chain and all of the drivetrain, you know, the derailleur, the chain set, making sure everything moves smoothly so you're not losing any power through an inefficient and poorly fitting drive system. And then what you need to do is, as part of your training, once you've had your bike fit, is to spend plenty of time in your aero position at race intensity. So that actually, when you're going out for an easy ride, riding at 70% for 3 hours probably feels quite easy. But it's still doing you some good if you're getting used to the aero position. The run. First off, 70 to 80% of triathlon injuries are running related. My argument is you do not need to run as much as you think you do. 3 hours a week consistently over 26 weeks will be enough. Of course, if you are aiming for a sub 3 hour marathon or anything below 3:15, you probably do need to be doing more running. But equally, you are probably already quite a talented runner. The compromise here is this whole risk versus reward. Do more running if you like to build your fitness, but you run the risk of getting injured. And the unfortunate thing is that whereas you can train around an injury in the swim and the bike, generally when you get injured from running, it's a lower limb injury, which makes running very difficult or impossible. So by trying to do more run training, you're increasing the risk of injury. And if and when you get injured, then you're not going to be doing any running at all. And so over time, you'd have actually done more running by doing a bit less, but being consistent. The next question to ask you when you go into your track sessions and doing your intervals at threshold pace is, how fast are you really going to run in your race? We talked about a 3:30 marathon. That is 8 minutes per mile, 5 minutes per kilometre. Right, that's a 50-minute 10K. A lot of triathletes I know can run way faster than that, but they never get close to 3:30 in an iron distance race. And why is that, do you think? Because the training is all directed at the wrong area. I would say that for running, you need some leg speed, which you can get by downhill running as part of your long run. You could get by doing some quite short 30-second intervals at 5K pace. You don't need to do a lot of threshold running. You probably need to do a lot of easy running just to build up the endurance and encourage your body to burn fats. So the question is, how fast are you really going to run in the race? And therefore, how fast do you need to run in training, and how often do you need to run fast in training? Equally, in your training, are you focused on trying to improve your run fitness to go faster? Or are you focused on trying to limit your losses in the second half of the run? Because this is where I think most people should be looking to improve, is what can you do to stop yourself slowing down later on? And I come back to the strength and conditioning, the gym work, the mobility, all the stuff you need to do to stop your body from tying up in the latter stages of the run. Final question then will be, what's the best use of your time? Would you be running more frequently over shorter distances, or would you be doing long runs? I think you need a variety. Again, I don't think you need to do that hard running, but I think spending time working on your technique and your drills to make you more efficient will prove beneficial way beyond just this next race, and it will help you to avoid injuries by being biomechanically sound. So please, again, don't skimp on that sort of stuff. Okay, finally, we talk about nutrition. I get a lot of questions about nutrition. Nutrition for Ironman, what do I do with my nutrition on race day? That's a great question. But if your race is in July, you have 7 months of nutrition to think about before race day. Okay? So by far and away, the most important fact is, what are you eating and consuming on a daily basis? This is important if you have a race weight and you are not currently at your race weight. If you have weight to lose, then what's your target? We had a Facebook question the other day from a guy who was thinking about losing 40 pounds before his race. But actually, the enormity of that task meant that he would be trying to cut calories at the same time as training hard. And that's a recipe for disaster. So the ultimate advice was that he needed to just be smarter with his eating, assume that he's going to lose some weight, but focus on smart eating and just take whatever weight loss he gets. Now, there's a question about race weight. What is your ideal race weight? I would say that whatever you had your best race at before, that would probably be your ideal weight. It's a weight for race day only. You can't exist at this weight all year round, but you still have to be very, very careful. And the best way to get to race weight is to take a long time over getting there so that it's minimal changes on a daily basis, to focus on good habits rather than cutting calories. So if you're prone to drinking 4 cans of Coke a day or eating a bar of chocolate, they probably don't add a lot to your recovery. So you could cut those out without any detrimental effects. Whereas if you are reducing the carbohydrates you're eating, or if you're just generally cutting down the calories whilst building up your training load, then that's asking for trouble. So look for easy gains. Most people are consuming some wanton calories because they don't think. A great favourite of mine is this sort of excessive consumption of refined sugars and processed carbs through cakes and biscuits because we think we can, because we do all the training. The truth is that you can't, and lots of training doesn't mean that you can. So think very strongly about what you're eating on a daily basis. So that's all I have for you today. Those are my basic points for preparing for an Ironman. Now, I said right at the beginning that there's a good chance that it could turn into a 2 or 3 parter. I think what I might need to do, depending on the feedback I get from this, is to come back and be much more specific about each of the elements. So we're talking about strength and mobility, we're talking about swim, bike and run, we're talking about nutrition, we talk about recovery. So there's six parts there, and maybe I need to focus a little bit more heavily on those. But for now, if you can follow these points and keep it nice and simple, I guarantee that you'll get to race day in great shape. So that's all for this week. I'm going to put on post on my Facebook page when this podcast goes out. And so if you have questions, the link will be there to go to the Facebook page. And if you have comments or questions, please do post them so we can get a bit more of a discussion going about you specifically and what your needs are. Alternatively, you could write to Beth@thetriathloncoach.com and she'll field all those inquiries. And what I may do is put all of this stuff into a PDF for you so that you can have it there as a document you can refer to. Okay, thanks as always for listening. I'll be back next week with some great guests. But for now, I've been your host, Simon Ward. This has been the Triathlon Coach Swatcast, and enjoy the rest of your week. Bye-bye. That's a wrap for this week's episode. Thank you so much for listening to the conversation, and I hope you learned at least one thing. If this is the first time you've listened in, please go back and take a listen to some of our previous guests, and I can guarantee they will be just as good as the one you've just heard. If you've been a regular listener, then thank you for being a part of this journey with me so far. Finally, I'd like to take just a few seconds to tell you about my SWAT Inner Circle program. In the last few years, I spent an awful lot of time creating training programs and resources to help you train and race at whatever triathlon distance you choose, and for some of the events outside of triathlon like aquabike, duathlon and swim run events. As a SWAT member, you get access to all of these plans for 12 months of the year, and on top of that we provide guidance on strength and conditioning, nutrition, plus a whole host of other supportive activities which help you to train, recover and race better. We also have a really friendly Facebook community. It's an exclusive Facebook page for SWAT members only, and there are over 150 of them already. If you join, you'll be able to get access to that page, and you'll be able to ask for help, and our members are all too happy to provide guidance and advice based on their experiences. I'll also be there to help you find solutions to your training problems, and all you have to do is tag me in the Facebook page in one of your posts, or you can book a 15-minute phone call should you need one. If you'd like more information, or if you're ready to press the button and join the SWAT Inner Circle, just email beth@thetriathloncoach.com and she will send you all of the details. So that's all for this week. Hopefully I'll see you again next week, same time, same place, with a different guest.